Cape Talk, Car Talk.
With Chiro de Siena to keep us company, of course, from cars.co.za. Chiro, always glad to have you with us.
Hi, Pippa. Thanks for having me.
Just a reminder to listeners that if you've got a motoring question for Chiro, give us a call on 021-446-0567. The only kind of question we don't like to answer is, what is the value of this car or what is a fair price for my car? If you're looking for that kind of information, you have two recommendations. One is to go to the TransUnion website. The other is to go and visit cars.co.za and do a bit of research there to find the information that you're looking for. Otherwise, please get those calls coming or send an SMS to 31567 or an email to pippah@capetalk.co.za. Now, Chiro, earlier this week I noticed a tweet that you shared that for the first time in the world, as far as we can tell, sales of electric vehicles have overtaken petrol and diesel cars. And this was in Norway, of all places, which is quite surprising because Norway, if I'm not mistaken, is a country that has quite a big investment in oil, in oil, doesn't it?
Yeah, Norway is sitting on enormous oil reserves, the 20th biggest in the world. But they've taken on a new sort of policy. And one article that I read put it as, don't get high on your own supply, which is quite interesting. So what they're trying to do is reduce their reliance on this resource, which they do have so much of. And the idea is to get all cars on the road to be zero emission by 2025. And they've made a very good start. Huge tax incentives to invest in electric vehicles are offered to motorists. Okay. And it now means that in 2017, 52% of cars purchased in Norway were either plug-in hybrid electric or fully electric vehicles.
52%, that's extraordinary because, I mean, there's nowhere near that kind of uptake in other parts of the world, South Africa included. Do we have any stats? I mean, are we even making up a percentage point yet in terms of electric sales?
I don't have sales on hybrid vehicles, but from what I understand, since the introduction of the BMW i3, which I think now is 2 years ago, possibly a little bit more, BMW have sold roughly 500 units and Nissan have sold roughly 100 Leafs. So that's, okay. That's only 600 units in a couple of years. So no, we are very far behind.
A very, very long way to go. Okay. So South Africa lagging way behind. I mean, is Norway unusual in Europe? You have said before that electric vehicles are the future for all countries with a sort of a sustainable future in mind. Are other countries in Europe perhaps going to catch up to that 52% figure that Norway's already reached?
I think because of the huge concern around particularly diesel emissions in European cities, you know, we're already seeing diesels of a certain age banned from cities like Paris. London is looking at increasing congestion charges for diesel motors. So I think most European cities are pushing in this direction. Norway has just has really got out in front of the pack through their incentives and through their investment in their charging infrastructure. But I do suspect, and I think the manufacturers will be very happy about this because it aligns with their strategies. I do suspect we will see this trend continuing, especially in Europe going forward.
Okay, thanks for an interesting update there. And then before we take any calls today, we want to give some feedback on a question which came up a couple of weeks ago. Chiro, just remind us, a caller phoned in who was struggling because he was driving an older model car and he could no longer find the lead replacement petrol he'd been using. Is that correct?
Yes, yeah, so it does seem that the availability of LRP is on the decrease. And for those motorists out there driving cars which don't seem to run or aren't designed to run on unleaded fuel, it is becoming quite tricky. And it's something that I didn't know too much about from a technical perspective, unfortunately.
Okay, but what you've done is find us somebody who could comment from a technical perspective, which we're very grateful for. So let me bring in at this point Nicol Lowe, who's the technical editor at Cars Magazine. Nicol, it's great to have you with us again. Welcome back to the show. Now, okay, let's talk a little bit about lead replacement petrol and how it differs from unleaded petrol. Obviously, it's the lead content. But, Nicol, just sketch the bigger picture for us. What kind of cars would have been using lead replacement petrol and why?
Yes, let's just talk about a bit of the background. So lead was phased out of petrol in South Africa in 2006. Prior to 2006, they used lead in fuel as a cheap octane booster. And one of the side benefits of having lead in your fuel is it also works pretty well as a dry lubricant between your valve and valve seat in your engine. So that actually prevented valve seat recession or wear on that valve seat. Now, when they stopped with lead, they introduced lead replacement petrol, which is basically unleaded fuel, but with an additive that creates the same lubrication properties as leaded back in the day.
Okay.
And now vehicles that need to use it or not use it, it all depends on what material is used for the cylinder head. So older vehicles used cast iron as the material in the cylinder head, and cast iron is fairly soft. So, which means if you used other, if you used the leaded fuel before and you go to unleaded now, there's a chance that your valve might actually grind into the valve seat, and that's where the wear comes from. So that's why you used LRP instead.
Okay.
But if your car is running a cylinder head that's an aluminium alloy, those cylinder heads, it's actually a softer material, but what they do use is a valve seat insert. It's a special insert at the valve seat which prevents this wear. So just to summarize, since 1995, most engines are aluminium alloys. So if your engine is produced after 1995, chances are very good that you can run on unleaded fuel, no problem. If you're still unsure, there's actually a NAMSA website where you can go. If you just Google NAMSA fuel compatibility, you can actually go there. There's a database where you can type in your vehicle year and number, a model, and engine specification will tell you if you need to use lead replacement petrol or not. You can also obviously contact the manufacturer. If you're still unsure, so you say you have an old classic car and you're not sure what material the head is made of, and you want to be on the safe side, and LRP is now disappearing from our forecourts, what you can do is when you fill with 95 unleaded fuel, there's some additive that you can buy either at your spare shop, or most fuel forecourts actually also stock this additive that is just mixed in small percentages with unleaded fuel, and it returns all the properties you need to protect your valve seat. So it's definitely not the end of the world. And when I did an article for Car Magazine back 2 years ago, apparently, if you look at a South African car park, only 1% of vehicles actually need LRP. But they still sell in large volumes because people are unsure if they need it or not, so they want this LRP. So my advice would be, first make sure if your car actually needs it or not. And in a very small percentage, small case where it actually needs it and the LRP is disappearing, just search for that additive that you just mix with unleaded and all your problems will be solved.
Nicol, thank you so much. You can't get it clearer than that. Nicol Lowe, the technical editor at Cars Magazine. I even feel like I understand it now. And David and Vessel, I hope those have solved or answered some of the questions you sent our way. A couple of people SMSing to say that there are still a number of BP outlets which do offer LRP, the lead replacement petrol. But if you, the first most important thing is to find out whether you do actually need it. So please use that NAMSA website searching for fuel compatibility or check with your manufacturer. And as a last resort, ask for that additive when you're filling up to use with the 95 unleaded. Nicol, thanks. Great to have you with us again. And Chiro, thank you so much for finding us an expert to explain it in such easy to understand terms.
No, Nicol is, he's just a genius. He really is. He's got a very interesting history in the car industry as well. I think his background is engineering, and I really just appreciate his views on most technical things.
As do we. Nicol, thanks. Great to have you with us. Nicol Lowe, the technical editor at Cars Magazine. With that, we ask you for your calls on 021-446-0567. A couple of SMSs and WhatsApps already in, Chiro. One SMS says, my husband tells me I'm crazy to want to buy a Jeep Cherokee. Do you also think it's a bad idea?
not entirely. Look, I think Jeep just unfortunately in South Africa doesn't have the brand cachet that a lot of other luxury car makers do. I mean, I'm sure if you asked this question in the United States, the answer would be very different. I think the biggest issue you're probably going to face with the Jeep is the depreciation. But I mean, that sort of thing affects brands like Volvo and Jaguar as well. In terms of the reliability of the vehicle, I don't have any hard and fast stats on that. There may potentially be an issue with parts availability as well, given that the brand has a fairly small footprint in South Africa. But yeah, the biggest issue there, as I say, is almost certainly going to be depreciation.
Okay, thanks for that feedback, and good luck with the purchase, whatever you decide. Somebody else would like your take on a Toyota Fortuner 2.4 diesel auto.
Yeah, so the 2.4 is just a slightly more affordable model. There's also the flagship engine, which is the 2.8. I've heard stories from people who say that the 2.4 is more than enough and they can tow whatever they want and there's no shortage of power. And then I hear stories from people saying, no, you have to have the 2.8 if you want to get any serious off-road or towing work done. So I think it's just the application is what you'll need, or what you're going to use the vehicle for is, should determine your purchasing decision. If you're not going to tow anything more than sort of a basic trailer, or if you're not going to tackle really serious off-road stuff, then I think the 2.4 is fine.
Okay, thank you. SMS is to 31567. Somebody is going back to hybrids. Chira says, I'm interested in buying an S400 hybrid with 75,000 kilometers on the clock. Would that be a safe buy? Or are you aware of any problems with the hybrid?
So that car would have been sold in particularly tiny numbers in South Africa. It was a special edition Mercedes-Benz, which came out, I think, roughly about 5 years ago now. I actually remember driving it and remember being hugely impressed. Mercedes-Benzes are already really comfortable and very quiet, but that one was just on another level. It was sort of magic carpet ride stuff. The problem is going to be, when the battery needs to be replaced, for instance, I think you're going to need to remortgage your house probably to afford that. And just sort of general upkeep of that car, I think, will be particularly difficult. But it's worth chatting to somebody at Mercedes-Benz about it. There's a product expert at Century City. He's a great guy to chat to. He knows Mercedes-Benz inside and out. And if you are serious about the car, I would definitely just drive through to Century City and have a chat to the guys there.
Okay, thank you. Another WhatsApp asking whether you view the Renault Scenic, a 2004 model, as a reliable car.
Wow, that was a while ago. Sure, that's a 14-year-old vehicle now. It's the sort of thing where I would definitely do some research into parts availability for it, and also whether a mechanic who's experienced with the car is nearby. You might find that there's somebody out there who can look after the car for you, but it is going to be quite tricky as that car hasn't been on the market in South Africa for, I think, possibly up to 5 years now. So it's going to be a bit of a difficult one. So I would do a lot of research before making the purchase decision.
Okay. This is one of those evergreen questions. The good student car, Chira, on the WhatsApp, somebody who in this case is a 27-year-old mature student in Cape Town doing an LLB and is looking for a student car. What does Chira think of the Ford Fiesta versus the Ford Figo versus the VW Polo?
The Fiesta and the Polo would be my first choices, I suppose. The Figo was a relatively budget entrance into the market from Ford. That's not to say that it's a poor choice. In fact, the Figo had a very, very efficient diesel engine, unbelievably efficient diesel engine, actually. Just keep in mind that, it is more expensive to maintain a diesel engine than a petrol engine if you're going into the high mileage or you plan to keep the car for a very long time. The previous generation Fiesta is about to be replaced, which might drive down secondhand values even further. So, in fact, sorry, actually the launch of the new car was last week. So the effect on the market should take hold fairly soon. So you might find that there are some Fiestas out there going for a very good price or that the dealers are quite negotiable on getting rid of that older stock.
Chira de Siena of cars.co.za. As always, great to have you with us, and we'll chat again next week. To the person asking us, what must I ask for when I go to the garage? Ask for valve seat protection, the additive that offers valve seat protection. And if you're looking for the website that Nicole referenced, it's NAAMSA, NAAMSA, standing for the National Association of Automobile Manufacturers. NAAMSA.co.za is your jumping off point. You're looking for the fuel capability information.